Uniswap in the left corner versus Gary Gensler in the right corner. Gary Let's go. Gensler. Showdown of the century. We're going to talk about all these details of why Gary Gensler thinks he's able to step into the ring against Hayden Adams.
Bankless Nation, it is the second week of April, and it is time for the Bankless Weekly Roll-Up. David, I was out last week. What did I miss, man?
Not too much. A couple SEC court cases, a couple airdrops, a couple mainnets, just an average week in crypto.
You know what? I feel like with the lawsuit that's just happened, we're going to get into with Gary Gensler and SEC suing Uniswap, it feels like Gary got stronger while I was out. And I'm wondering,
stronger,
when you go
just
out...
just like more audacious?
Audacious. Yeah. I don't know if he's actually stronger, but he thinks he is in his head.
Yeah.
So it's weird that when I go out, when I miss a roll up, he gets stronger. But when you miss a roll up, you're out there like slaying horcruxes. I don't know what you're doing, man. You're on mountains. I'm at the beach and he gets stronger and then you just do something else. So I think in order to win this lawsuit against Gary Gensler, we got to send you to another mountaintop.
Yeah, sounds like I'm going on vacation and you're staying here, buddy. You must stay. You must produce podcasts.
Oh, my God. Did you catch the eclipse, by the way? That was another thing that is off topic that happened this week.
In New York, which was 91% coverage. And then I come back to like my friends and be like, yeah, that was kind of lame. And then I got sent this like XKCD comic of like the coolness, like levels of the eclipse as a function of how close you are to the path of totality.
Yeah. And like, you're right there.
It's either 100% covered or nothing. Yeah. It's not cool to be like 95% covered. It's like regardless, everyone went to their rooftops and like looked at the sun. It was like slightly darker. It was slightly cooler. Yeah. What about you? Yeah. You were in the path of totality.
No,
either, right?
I was like 95%, so I caught that, but I didn't get the full effect. And I regret that. I regret that now. I regret missing that. I have some FOMO.
I actually had tickets to this one event in Austin that was going to be like 200 people, but I didn't get flights. I didn't look at flights until like 2 weeks before. And I didn't realize how big of a deal it was. And when I looked at flights, like 2 weeks before the eclipse, it was like $3,000. And I'm like, oh, I can't do that. And plus, there was a Dick Butts on Ice event here in New York, which had to go to.
Yeah, of course, because that's like a once in a lifetime opportunity, right?
It truly was. It truly was.
Well, I'm glad you made that one. I just, the way I rationalize it to myself is, well, what if I show up at the place? Like my family lives in Southern Ontario. So what if I show up in Southern Ontario? It's always cloudy there. What if it's cloudy?
Right.
I've gone all that way and I won't see it. But anyway, regrets. I have no regrets about this bull cycle, though, David, that we're in right now.
And
I'm pretty excited about it. What are we covering this week?
Uniswap Labs versus the SEC. Let's go.
It's going down.
Hayden Adams, another Adams, versus Gary Gensler. Probably the biggest throwdown that I think the crypto industry will ever see. I'm just looking forward to Hayden just like absolutely wiping the floor with the SEC. Like, that's the only logical conclusion of this, right?
By the way, Adams versus Gensler isn't the only matchup. We're going to talk about a matchup. My co-host, David Hoffman, is actually boxing someone in crypto.
Yeah, not in the SEC. Somebody else in crypto. We'll talk about that
story
at the end of the podcast.
Yeah, wait till the end. Also, Eigenlayer, the mainnet, is here. That's a big freaking deal. It's mostly here. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about what's here, what's still to come. What else we got?
BlackRock Biddle Fund now has a direct pipeline to USDC. Bankless Nation, who listened to that episode with Securitize, got the alpha first. What does this mean for this new tokenized treasury product? What does it mean to have a direct pipeline to USDC? And also, another week, another token drop, this time on Solana. It's always a good week in crypto, especially when prices are going up, which they were kind of going up a little bit this week, which we're going to talk.
Are we bored of token drops yet? I mean, are we bored of getting free money, like hundreds of millions of dollars? And I feel like it's just like, oh, it's another token drop.
It's boring for all the people who didn't get the token drop. But like, if you got that token drop, like say what you will about the points meta, it like token drops are doing their job of becoming more precise and more directed towards people's respective communities.
Yeah.
So like people who are getting the token drop are extremely excited because they committed, the time, cost of their money and their capital to that project. And so they're very excited. Did I receive this token drop? No, because it's on Solana. Oh, actually, maybe I did, actually, now that I think about it.
You don't know.
Bankless
claim bulls, David. What are you doing?
I bought my Mad Lad on Tensor, so maybe I got the token drop. I don't know.
See, we'll
find out.
You're not even motivated enough to check at this point. You're just like all the free money coming in.
I think I might have lost that wallet. Anyways, we're going to get into all of these conversations and more. But first, we're going to talk to Cartesi, our friends and sponsors over at Cartesi, who's building the first modular execution layer as a layer 2 or layer 3 on Ethereum for using a Linux runtime, which helps you produce real-world computing environments for Web3 devs. That was kind of a mouthful. Basically, imagine running Doom as a layer 2 with on-chain state. Just think about like all the things you can do with Linux, which is like literally endless, with all of the decades of rich code libraries and open source tooling around the Linux ecosystem, and now put that onto a runtime as a layer 2 or layer 3 on Ethereum. So Cartesi, they're giving away money. That is a call to action. You can get a grant from Cartesi for developing inside of the Cartesi ecosystem. And also there's an open source bug hunting initiative. So click the link in the show notes to getting started with Cartesi today.
This is one of those build to earn models too. You got to build something earn. In order to earn that grant.
Build to earn. I think that's just called work.
Okay. We discovered that a long time ago, I guess. Yeah. Let's talk about markets today, David. So tell me about Bitcoin on the week. What are we looking at?
3% up this week, which okay. I would call, flattish yeah. up. Started the week $68,000, ending the week at $70,000. Actually, it's a little bit more up than I thought, maybe at 4%. So keeping its nose, its eyeballs right above that $70,000 mark.
That's not bad. I'm feeling great above 70K. Give me a quick Bitcoin ETF update, if you will. This headline here, Grayscale Bitcoin ETF sees record lowest daily outflow of 18 million. This is kind of like a one-time event, isn't it, for the Grayscale Bitcoin ETF to have sort of all of its outflows leaked out right. into, I don't know, where does it go? Tell me, why is this significant?
Yeah, so the outflows of Grayscale, the Grayscale ETF, are like the brakes on the Bitcoin price, whereas the inflows to all the other Bitcoin ETFs are the gas. Mm. And right now, like, gas and brakes have been in this war with each other. And right now, April 11th, this is when, that's actually today, Grayscale Bitcoin ETF sees record lowest daily outflows of $18 million. So only $18 million of pressure is being put on the brakes. Granted, like the approval and initial like opening of the doors of the floodgates into the Bitcoin ETFs is also kind of like a one-time event. So it's not like that. That also kind of teeters off. But the thing is, it's like we kind of are expecting the brakes to teeter off way sooner than the gas, because the gas has there's a lot of gas in the tank. And so as we see the lowering of the outflows out of Grayscale, we see a release of the pressure on the brakes. So hopefully when this continues to approach zero, we will see liftoff.
So why are people outflowing? Is it basically it's been less liquid previously. Now it's much more liquid and they've been locked up for a while and Grayscale fees are a lot higher than the other ETFs. And so that's why there's outflow in Grayscale in comparison to
the
above.
Above. Yeah. That's so people were buying the GBTC discount back when you could buy discounted Bitcoin at 15% on the bet that like eventually Grayscale will turn into an ETF. And now it is. Like you said, Grayscale fees are 2.5% versus other ETFs at 0.2%, 0.3%. And so why are people just paying those fees? Well, because also some people are sitting on a mountain of capital gains. And so selling to avoid those fees actually incurs a larger fee, which is capital gains tax.
That was a good bet a year ago, by the way, when Bitcoin was trading in Grayscale off 20-25% NAV. I'll note, because we're going to talk about ETH price right now. Mm-hmm. It's about that with Ether right now. So there is an Grayscale Ether trust, if you call it. It's called Ether E. You can buy that in your 401k account right now. And it's trading at a 25% discount to premium.
Right.
So that will come in line on the actual ETH price as soon as an Ethereum ETF is approved.
Which you would assume the ETH price would also be much higher once the ETF is approved. So you get 25% off of a higher price later is the idea.
It seems like a great
deal. It's a good bet.
Like we don't know whether it's going to happen this year or next year, but we are pretty confident it's going to happen. So why not just lock in that 25% discount? Anyway,
what is your time frame? Not 2 years? Like it's going to happen within 2 years.
Right. It's a good deal on some ETH, I think. Anyway, where are we at on the ETH price this week?
ETH price up about $100, start of the week at $3,400, up about 4-ish% to $3,500. Really having its ratio with Bitcoin, the 0.05 number, really be defended. We fell down below 0.05, but it came right back up. Eric Wall, did you notice, Ryan, maybe while you were out, maybe you didn't see this. Eric Wall made this tweet saying if the ETH BTC ratio drops below 0.0495 or something, I'll shave my head. and then it drops down below it, and he goes and shaves his head.
Wait,
and
why?
It's like, no one was telling him to do that. Okay. He just tweeted it out, and then he was like, oh, well, it fell down below. Guess I have to go shave my head now. And he went and shaved his head.
Okay.
And like Eric,
thanks,
it's
Eric.
Not like he had short hair to begin with. He had like long, luscious locks.
No, it's
like,
fantastic.
He had fantastic hair, and now it's
gone. A loss for all of us. I don't know if that's a nickname. Well, but I don't. Was he trying to like prove something? I know he's, no, he's more of a Bitcoiner than Ethereum, but he doesn't hate Ethereum.
This was one of his tweets in it was one of his New Year tweets. It's like, here's my like 20 predictions for 2024. And he says like the ETH BTC ratio will not fall below like this particular line. And then the line was like 0.095 or something.
You got it. That's why you got to be careful with your predictions, your New Year's resolutions and your predictions here.
Yeah.
Where are we at on the total market
cap? Crypto market cap, kind of unchanged over the last 3 weeks, 2.7. Still about the same. We are just like hovering right below last cycle's all time highs.
Do you read this post from Arthur Hayes?
Arthur Hayes, I did not. Tell me about it.
Notorious crypto trader. The TLDR is he's actually short-term bearish on April. So it's not going to be April. He's like bearish on crypto.
Specifically on the month of April?
Yeah. That's what Arthur Hayes, I mean, he's a trader, right? So he can be bearish on these timelines. He gets more bullish after April and May.
Okay.
But he is selling. He's actively been selling in April because
what's his rationale?
The halving occurs at a time when dollar liquidity is tighter than usual. There's some, like, he goes through this entire post, there's some reasons that dollar liquidity is kind of getting tighter in the month of April. You know, the BTFD, is that what it's called?
Bank term fund deposit program or something, which is over. That ended over 2 weeks ago.
That'll affect it, kind of a liquidity suction in April. But so he took I took full profit on these positions. Mu, Sol, and NMT. He's basically like selling his meme coins and such. Not that Sol's a meme coin. I didn't mean to imply that, but he says that. I'm selling my meme coins.
He says Sol is a meme coin?
No. I said I'm not implying that. I'm not implying that.
Yeah, careful what you say about Sol these days. People will come after you.
Let's do an L2 update. I'm really excited about L2s these days. This is brought to you by our friends over at Mantle, which is... a new and up-and-coming L2. You know what? I shouldn't say they're up-and-coming because they're already established. They're crushing
it. They're an incumbent
Mantle,
at
number
this point.
Five.
Yeah. Oh, wow. We broke through $40 billion in layer twos. Hell yeah. $43 billion. We've been at like $39 billion for like the last 3 weeks trying to get our heads above 40. $43 billion. Nice drop.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. That's more money than I have. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So what are the other stats? I mean, should we look at active addresses today?
Yeah,
that's something we don't usually look at.
Yeah. Active addresses, they're up across the board. So base at 1.5 million new active addresses as of this year. That's up 300% in the last month. Arbitrum at 1.4 million active addresses. That's up 120% in the last 30 days. ZK Sync Era, 1.2 million active addresses, 20% up in 30 days. And then Optimism Mainnet at 650,000 addresses. That's up 85% in 30 days. So like layer two summer. Remember, we've been talking about layer two summer since what? 2021? 2022? Yeah. Well, it's 2024.
It's here
and it's finally here.
we had to wait for an actual like bull cycle, I think.
Yeah,
surprise. To say this. And some big protocol upgrades, which we'll get to in a second. But one thing I want to call attention to here is as a result of this traction, it's real economic value being created, in particular in this case on Coinbase. So, you know, Coinbase releases its quarterly earnings. It's a publicly traded company, so they do that. So, and you can also see this on chain, Coinbase's total revenue from Base, the layer two that it recently launched, has now surpassed $40 million and is starting, look at this chart, starting to go parabolic.
There is some healthy area under the curve there.
So what I love about Coinbase being public is everybody on Wall Street gets to see this. All the analysts get to start tracking a layer two as a product unit line, as a source of revenue for this exciting growth stock. And everybody else will catch on as well. It's just,
I don't know about that leap. They're going to look at that line item in the PML and be like, what the hell is that?
just ignore it. It's just a bubble.
I don't know how to categorize
it's
that.
All
put that under the miscellaneous category.
I mean, but still, I mean, that's substantial. $40 billion net new revenue for a layer 2.
$40 million,
yes. And also, what I would say is, what a great deal. Like, on Ethereum, They don't pay much in terms of transaction fees to Ethereum. They get to take home.
They pay very little. They're taking home. It's like a 99% profit margin.
Whew. Pretty good deal here. David, give us an update on Blobspace, please.
Blobspace. Okay, so 4 weeks later, blobs are now coming up on 4 weeks old. The median gas fee on layer twos is now 10 times lower, from above 50 cents to about 3 cents. Blobs have met layer two demand despite inscriptions, which means that like layer twos aren't actually competing over blob space with other layer twos.
Nice.
And actually aren't even, no one's truly competing for blob space right now. Even though people are still putting their JPEGs into inscription space, it seems to be there's enough room to go around for now. Optimism Collective profits at record high. That's pretty obvious. That $40 million going into Coinbase, 15%. I don't know actually whether that $40 million was calculated before or after Optimism Collective took its 15% tax into the collective, its fee. But Base, Zora, Mode Network, and then actually Optimism Mainnet, these are all part of the Optimism Collective, right? So they're all paying 15% into this like collective that
nice.
Is supposed to be like shared resources for all of them. And then of course, layer two is seeing all-time high record, 5 times the amount of demand from the start of this year. Hell yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's no accident that all of these metrics are up. Most activity is up because we just got a big blob space stimulus in terms of reduction costs here. Very cool. David, what's going on with the top 10? It's been a while since we looked at this, and there's a new asset that has entered the top 10 cryptocurrencies by market cap, which I don't recall seeing since, it reminds me of 2017, 2018.
Right. Yeah. That is kind of like a throwback, right?
Ton. It's the Telegram blockchain, and they have just surpassed, they're number 10 now in terms of total market cap, worth total fully diluted $36 billion, fully diluted. This is a Telegram chain, is it not?
Yeah, so TON is the token, Telegram Open Network. You said $37 billion fully diluted, but with an actually market cap of $25 billion, which like in this world of like high FDV, low float tokens, this is not one of them. Like 2/3 of these tokens are out on the open market, and it's commanding a $25 billion market cap. Okay, so there's some backstory here that probably newer crypto entrants probably aren't familiar with. Telegram did an ICO, one of the biggest ICOs in 2017. It was like top three ICOs to do a token for their app. And maybe for listeners who aren't familiar, Telegram, it's like a messaging app that is like the backbone of a lot of the crypto meta. Like every project, every founder is on Telegram. Every VC is on Telegram. There are Telegram groups. There's just like, it's like the alternative to Discord. That's a little bit more universal. Everyone across the world all uses Telegram. It's like WhatsApp. It's just like WhatsApp, but for some reason in crypto, we use Telegram. They did this ICO 2017, one of the largest ICOs. They got sued. They got sued by the SEC for doing an unregistered security sale.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. And that like really put a damper in the whole project. And I kind of thought it was disappearing, like many of the ICOs.
Just a zombie chain.
Just a zombie chain. Yeah.
Never
just
come back.
Did their ICO, like pocketed the cash.
Ship
something and then called it good. Yeah, just like EOS did. Yeah. And then it turns out there's this Telegram Foundation, which is meaningfully differentiated. I think this is like actually true, not just like decentralization theater, from the Telegram app leadership. And they are making Telegram the blockchain. And I think if like, I don't know because I'm in America, but like if you're not in America, there's like a Telegram wallet. And it's like now kind of becoming like you would classify this as an ETH killer, I guess, actually, just because like they're putting a wallet into their app and they're putting like DeFi and tokens on it. And honestly, like Telegram has a literal bajillion users. And so it's actually kind of makes
sense.
It's
catching a bid.
It's catching a bid.
Based on all this, yeah.
Yes. And so it has entered the top 10 crypto market cap, top 10 tokens, which like is a kind of a hard place to enter.
It's pretty impressive. I'm not sure how much there is there because I haven't really spent any time on it. I don't know very much about the ecosystem, but it's ahead of Cardano at this point and Avalanche.
Well.
Huh? Think of that. Those are darlings of the last cycle.
Yeah.
So we'll see how these top 10 change as we continue here.
Let's do like a quick snapshot of the top 10. Bitcoin number one, of course. Yeah, like just a review of the top 10, because like whenever I got into crypto,
you start with Bitcoin. Yeah, it's Bitcoin still.
Bitcoin is number one, meaningfully number one.
It's always been number one. Ever since I got here, it's been number one.
Number one, Bitcoin, two, Ethereum, three, Tether, four, Binance Chain, five, Solana, six, XRP, seven, Lido staked Ether, eight, USDC, nine, Dogecoin, 10, Toncoin. How do you feel just about like the state of the top 10 right now?
Not super surprising. I mean, BNB and Solana continue to battle it out, which is interesting. Yeah. XRP, just God knows, man. They have the diehard fans.
So sticky. I have no idea.
They've always been here. So I just kind of like skip it, gloss over it. Yeah. Still in the top 10. Actually impressive at this point. Yeah. And then Dogecoin, having a meme in the top 10 is interesting. I mean, there's staying power to meme coins, isn't there? At least, you know, high Lindy type meme coins. They're not going away.
I would be very happy to see Dogecoin flip XRP. I'm totally unbothered by a meme coin being in the top 10. Dogecoin just, it feels like very honest. It's they're like, meme coins are real. There's something to be learned about meme coins. So I don't mind it being in the top 10. XRP can just get the hell out of there. that's the one that really bugs me in this like top 10. It's like XRP just can like, it can
doesn't bother me anymore. Nothing bothers me, David.
Because like it's always been a conversation about like here the top 10 is like 90% of the crypto market cap. So it's a little bit reflective of like what the industry is. It's been growing in quality ever since, like ever since I've gotten into like the top 10 used to be a complete joke.
Bitcoin.
Now there's
diamond.
Only one. Now there's Bitcoin diamond. Yeah. Bitcoin now there's cash. Only one joke in the top 10. And that's XRP.
Wow. All the XRP fans of Bankless just immediately deleted this podcast from their player.
Yeah. How many of those do you think we have left?
Let's talk about this. Another top 10. So we're looking at NFTs. Breaking: Bitcoin ordinals now have two collections amongst the top three NFTs by market cap in the world. Wow. What are these collections here? I didn't even recognize them because I'm not a Bitcoin NFT enjoyer.
Yeah, so this is actually not true anymore. This was a blip in time. So right now, the top NFTs are CryptoPunks by market cap. So that's 1.4 billion. RuneStones, which is a Bitcoin Ordinals project, at 700 million, followed by Bored Apes Yacht Club, not dead yet, at 430.
Wait, but RuneStones is number two.
RuneStones is number two.
And that's a Bitcoin NFT project.
It's a Bitcoin NFT project, yeah.
My God, I would not have thought that that could be the case going into this cycle. Not at all.
Yeah, not done yet, though. So, like, Bored Apes are number three, Pudgy Penguins number four, Node Monkeys are number five, also a Bitcoin Ordinals. Bitcoin Puppets, also Bitcoin Ordinals, is number six, followed by Mad Lads on Solana for number seven, followed by Miladies. Followed by Chromie Squiggles, which was, like, the original are, like, generative art blocks.
Yeah.
Bitcoin Ordinals, like, aggressively entering the top NFT projects.
Let's talk about TradFi for a minute. There's a big metric that came out, which was inflation this week. I'm going to give you some stats. So it was hotter than expected in the month of March. So we are up to almost 4%, David, inflation.
Up to 3.8. Almost 4%. So we're below 4%. We're at 3.8.
Yeah, 3.8. Okay. We were 3.2 in February. This is hotter than people thought. So surprisingly stubborn inflation was a term that was thrown around.
Is that why markets kind of like weren't happy this week?
Yeah, and by the way, the 3.8%, it's 3.5% if you include food and fuel prices, which are a bit more volatile, but 3.8 if you don't, which is kind of like another important metric. An analyst said this, it's problematic for the Fed. I don't see how they can justify a June cut with this strong inflation data. And
I guess the real question is like, what's the trend though? Because like, if the trend is like, you know, still downwards, please go down.
Do you want to talk trends though? Look at this.
I do.
This is also from the Arthur Hayes article. He got it from Jim Bianco, Bianco Research. This is yearly federal spending as a percentage of nominal GDP. So I'm changing
yearly
tracks.
Federal spending as a result of nominal GDP. What does that mean?
Okay, so I'm changing tracks now. I'm not talking about inflation. I'm talking about debasement, and issuance of the dollar, essentially. Okay, so, or actually not issuance of the dollar. This is federal spending. So this is fiscal policy. You know how we're moving into, modern monetary theory, where kind of like fiscal takes charge of like more spending, and that's why deficits grow, and that's why like the dollar inflates, and we're printing money this way, as a percentage of GDP, America's GDP, right, which is a nice metric, like a relative metric. So look at from the 70s to all the way to 2008, and we spike up, and then there's COVID. Look at this spike. In COVID, we got up to March 2021, we got up to 33% of our GDP we were actually spending and from a federal government perspective. And now we're back down. And so, like, the problem with all of this, David, is we are spending like it's a wartime.
Yeah, I'm not much of a TA guy, but that chart is bullish. I would buy that chart.
He would buy this chart, right? And the question is, how do you buy this chart? It's probably by selling your dollars and selling your T-bills.
And buying things that are inflation scarce. And debasement hedges.
Yeah, debasement hedges. Anyway, assets. that's the long-term reality here. So whether inflation heats up or whether it cools down, I mean, you got to deal with all of this debasement at some point, don't you?
Indeed, indeed.
There's also some bad news, I think, while I was out and I got caught up with it about Ethereum ETFs. So probability continues to tick down that we
only
get in May.
Bad news about Ethereum ETFs. That's the only flavor that news comes in.
It's a hated asset right now. what's this from Nate?
Nate, who is a general TradFi ETF market commentator, says several ETF issuers have met with the SEC regarding the spot Ether ETF, but according to Barron's, which is like this financial media agency, quote, those discussions have largely been one-sided without the agency giving companies critical feedback needed to finalize their products, with, of course, the May 23rd deadline approaching very quickly. So people are kind of like starting to like throw in the towels, like, yeah, that like low percentage of the ETH ETF is like quickly approaching zero. Polymarket, however, has it coming in at 21%.
21% by June 30th.
By June 30th. Yeah, but like it's basically May or nothing. Like once the May deadline passes, that's going to go to zero. Yeah. So there's $91,000 betting on a 80% chance of getting denied.
Yeah, I think he gets denied. Unfortunately.
Okay, so ready for conspiracy theory?
You have another one? Is it one we haven't
got one every single week, brother?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm ready. Tell me.
Okay, so the market's already priced in the ETH ETF denial.
Okay, of course.
And so once the denial, this isn't. I'm not completely standing by this, but
once
like
the
this
denial
is
happens,
a
the ETH price.
The market, the ETH price goes up.
Okay. I choose to believe. A big question, like for that to happen though, is what part of the cycle are we in? I know we just recorded an episode with Raoul Paul. That's he gives his estimate for where we are in the cycle. You know, are we in spring, summer, fall, winter, that sort of thing. But I think a great comparison is if we compare it to the previous three cycles that we've had. Yeah. You know,
I love this actually.
2011, 2015, in terms of the number of days elapsed. You know, these cycles are all about, you know, say 1,000 to 1,400 days or so, right? And we are just over, we're about 500 days into the current cycle, the fourth bull market cycle, if you will. And so if this plays out the way the other previous three cycles have, then we have roughly 1 year to the cycle top. The top, that would be summer time, right? All-time highs. No, sorry, like all-time highs of this cycle.
Of this cycle, yeah.
And then another subsequent year to the bear market. So another like year where you spend in fall season where it's kind of like up and down, you get some recoveries. So about 2 years, but 1 year to the top if it plays out like the other cycles. You believe this?
If it plays out at like the other cycles. Okay, so just for the podcast listeners who can't view these charts, you basically have four lines that are overlaid each other. And really the first one of like the 2009 to 2011, that one doesn't count because that one was insane, like such an outlier.
Yeah,
this is Bitcoin it's Bitcoin going up infinity percentage.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so like we have 2011, 2015, and 2018 as the years that we are comparing this 2022 to 2024 bull market in. And then every single year of previous bull markets gets more muted and more prolonged than the previous.
Yeah.
So it goes up less, but it also lasts longer in time, generally speaking. This one is everyone is going to start talking about how this time is different. And they're going to give you like evidence that you are totally going to be compelled by like the ETFs. It's totally prolonging this bull market. It's making it's going to be a super cycle because of the ETFs.
People are saying this. They're saying super cycle again.
I'm predicting that this. Okay. Well, people are saying that this time is different because of the ETFs. That we have like a larger, like fundamental shift in capital flows. We have people have like using their 401k or just passively buying Bitcoin without thinking about it. So that is totally changing the game. And honestly, like I'm compelled by that argument, but at the same time, I'm also equally compelled by like what must go up comes down. So any amount of reflexivity up will be met with reflexivity down, which is why I want, and I think everyone wants, this bull market to be as prolonged as possible. And so the less like crazy we can go up, the longer we can have good times.
Well, that's what we want. I mean, the question is what's going to happen. The base case here, and again, I like the idea of being dumber this cycle. It's just going to play out how the other three cycles did. Yeah. Somewhere in that range, right? Might go up a little higher, might last a little longer, might be a little shorter, but it's going to go up, and we probably have about a year, year and a half, maybe 2 years, and we're gonna repeat again. Yeah. I think that's the base case, and I'm not trying to overthink this one. The fractal, it's just a fractal. It just happens every single time this way.
If you do think it's gonna happen, like there's like this window of time, call it like that starts in like 400 days and ends in 800 days, and if you sell at any point in that window and just hold, you'll end up being happy.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Well, I'm happy already, David. Are you happy?
I'm happy. I'm always happy.
It's been a good market so far. What do we got coming up?
Coming up next, EigenLayer, now live on the Ethereum mainnet with its first AVS. What to do now? What comes next? We're going to talk all about that and all the details. What does it mean to EigenLayer to be live? And Uniswap in the left corner versus Gary Gensler in the right corner. Let's go. Showdown of the century. We're going to talk about all these details of why Gary Gensler thinks he's able to step into the ring against Hayden Adams. But first, a moment to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible, especially Kraken, our preferred exchange for crypto in 2024. If you do not have an account with Kraken, consider clicking the link in the show notes getting started with Kraken today.
They are also fighting the SEC.
Yes. Oh, yes. If you want a crypto trading experience backed by world-class security and award-winning support teams, then head over to Kraken, one of the longest-standing and most secure crypto platforms in the world. Kraken is on a journey to build a more accessible, inclusive, and fair financial system, making it simple and secure for everyone, everywhere, to trade crypto. Kraken's intuitive trading tools are designed to grow with you, empowering you to make your first or your 100th trade in just a few clicks. And there's an award-winning client support team available 24/7 to help you along the way, along with a whole range of educational guides, articles, and videos. With products and features like Kraken Pro and Kraken NFT Marketplace and a seamless app to bring it all together, it's really the perfect place to get your complete crypto experience. So check out the simple, secure, and powerful way for everyone to trade crypto, whether you're a complete beginner or a seasoned pro. Go to kraken.com/bankless to see what crypto can be. Not investment advice. Crypto trading involves risk of loss. Launching a token? Don't let complex legal and tax issues slow you down. Toku provides specialized support to optimize your launch and ensure that you as a founder and your team and your investors get the most tax-efficient outcomes. The Toku team understands the crypto space inside and out and will ensure your token launch is fully compliant while maximizing tax efficiency. Toku can connect you with the best attorneys if you need them to make sure that you have the best advice, and Toku can help to optimize your taxes so you pay the least possible amount of taxes while still maintaining legal compliance. With Toku's guidance, you can concentrate on building your company while Toku handles the logistics. Token launches don't have to be complicated. Talk to Toku today to get a free initial token valuation. Taking self-custody of your crypto is one of the most important things you can do on your bankless journey. It's also one of the hardest things to get right, with huge consequences if you don't. If you want help going bankless, talk to Casa. Casa helps you take custody of your crypto assets so you don't have to wonder whether you're doing it right. Casa is a one-stop shop for doing self-custody the right way. With Casa Vaults, you can hold Ether, Bitcoin, stablecoins, all with one simple app and multiple keys for the ultimate peace of mind, with a support team to help you every step of the way. But it doesn't stop at self-custody, because even though crypto is forever, you are not. We all plan on making life-changing wealth in crypto, but with Casa's inheritance product, life-changing wealth can elevate to generational wealth for your kids and your loved ones who don't know anything about crypto. With Casa, you won't lose your private keys and you won't accidentally take them to the grave either. Click the link in the description to get started securing your generational wealth.
Big freaking deal here. Uniswap just received a enforcement notice from the SEC. This is called a Wells notice, which is the SEC telling Uniswap, we are bringing you to court. Get ready. What are the details here? What actually happened?
So we still need some more details about like why, what's motivating the SEC, like why they are saying they are taking the Uniswap Labs company, the software company, to court. So there's three different vectors of speculation here. There is operating an illegal exchange, like Uniswap the protocol, which like seems dubious because like completely decentralized permissionless protocol.
That's what they said about Coinbase though, right?
Yeah, same thing that they said about Coinbase, right? Like, but like at least Coinbase is a centralized exchange, yeah. Right? Same thing with like Kraken, same thing with all the other like exchanges. This one's different because it's for all the reasons that we talk about on Bankless. It's, you know, on chain, smart contracts, totally permissionless, could be totally that, hands though. Off. Could be that. I guess it could be that. There's the Uniswap wallet, which the Uniswap Labs company actually does produce. And then there's the Uni token itself. So like speculation is like it's one of these three things. Maybe it's like a handful of them. Maybe it's all of them. What we do know, though, that because the SEC is not FinCEN, it's nothing to do with AML and KYC, just because that's out of scope for the SEC. So it's highly likely that it's one of these three things. We're still kind of waiting to hear about exactly what the details are. But that's what we know of to this day.
David, I think this is a big deal because...
Yeah, I think this is great. I'm stoked.
You're stoked? You're excited about it? You got to tell me why you're excited. Like, like, first of all, I'm just like deeply disappointed in the U.S. and the SEC and Gary Gensler, because this is not them picking on an exchange or the centralized order book, right? This is them picking on crypto's and DeFi's flagship protocol that has done things incredibly well to decentralize all of the things that need to be decentralized. This is them pushing a message to all of DeFi and saying, we don't want this. The SEC does not want this here in the US, in America. Like, this is the first targeted attack on DeFi that I've seen. And it's no mistake that they're picking the largest, like our poster child protocol in order to place this attack. So that's why it's a big deal and pretty disappointing from that, you know, like they're going this far. Now it's just like this feels like a new type of attack.
And for all of those reasons, those are the same exact reasons why I'm stoked. Hayden Adams, when he tweeted out about this, he goes, "I'm not surprised, just annoyed, disappointed like you, Ryan, and ready to fight." So like the Uniswap Labs, you know, they have a chief legal officer. They knew that this was a possibility. Yep. They're ready to fight. And I would much rather have Hayden Adams and Uniswap Labs, a beloved protocol who decentralized and did things right and is literally the hardest nut to crack for the SEC to go to court with the SEC. They are literally our best people to send.
Wow,
and
that's
Gary
a good
Gensler
point. That's a great
chose
point.
Them to go after them. And so like
they chose our prize fighter.
Yes, they're like they're the best going after the champion, Hayden Adams. Like they're going to get absolutely worked. And then we're going to be able to take that victory and like parade it around DeFi. Ooh, and like, look, guys, like Uniswap is like leading the example here. They are the vanguard for us.
This like, is Hayden Adams.
I think this is a slam dunk. It's just going to, sadly, unfortunately, take a lot of time.
Hayden Adams goes on, "I'm confident that the products we offer are legal and that our work is on the right side of history. But it's been clear for a while that rather than working to create clear and informed rules, the SEC has decided to focus on attacking longtime good actors like Uniswap and Coinbase, all the while letting bad actors like FTX slip by."
Like, imagine in a world where Gary Gensler and the SEC found some like shady, low market cap, like shitcoin copy, carbon copy fork of Uniswap that was actually led by a scammer. And then they took them to court and then they sued them. And then they paraded them as like, this is what DeFi
is. That would have been a way better strategy for Gensler.
That would have been a way better strategy.
He's really messing up here.
But yeah. And so like, so Jake Stravinsky's take in my episode with him recently was that the SEC is determining what is regulation of the crypto industry by taking everyone to court and losing, like as part of their strategy to determine what regulation is. Like if you are not going to court and losing, then you are not trying hard enough to regulate crypto. So they're taking our best people to court. Maybe they win, maybe they lose, probably going to lose. And then they will say like, well, look, we tried to regulate them. They won in court. And that's where the line is drawn.
Well, you know what I'm excited about, actually, now that you reframe it like that, you're giving me some more hope here, David, is like the entire world. This could go to the, and Hayden said this, this could go to the Supreme Court, actually.
I hope it does. Sorry, Hayden. It has to be someone. It's going to be you. Well, but like, thank you.
Well, like that means the entire world is going to hear this narrative. And let's talk about the narrative. Fast forward to today, Hayden says, the Uniswap protocol has processed over 2 trillion in volume. 2 trillion. Many thousands of teams and developers have forked our code and built on top of it. We built an entirely new financial infrastructure that is transparent, fair, secure, and accessible, powering an entire industry. The team did all this from the U.S. in their offices in New York City.
Proudly.
Yeah, proudly. U.S.-based entrepreneur, founder. People often ask me why we stay in the U.S., and my answer is simple. I believe that blockchain is incredibly powerful technology. Like the internet, it's here to stay. So someone needs to figure this out. It might as well be us. And when you build technology that improves people's lives, you don't need to hide.
Mm-hmm.
David, everyone's going to hear that story.
Yep.
From Uniswap and Hayden Adams. Who hasn't used Uniswap and been like, this is incredible.
Right.
This is like totally. the Google of finance, essentially. I just click here and I swap and I'm done.
He ended this tweet with a huge mic drop. He says, the SEC's mission is protecting investors, maintaining fair and orderly and efficient markets, and facilitating capital formation. This is a noble mission, Hayden says. I would argue Uniswap does a far better job of this today than the SEC. I would love to hear these arguments be made on the record in court in front of the entire world.
Way better than FTX and Sam Bankman-Fried and the world hearing that story. Let's hear this story in a court system. Sorry, Hayden.
Hayden is a smart, sharp dude who is like not afraid to bite back when he needs to. And like Gary Gensler is just like leaning forward, giving him his face for like a right hook.
He's also the person I'd least expect to be in this kind of situation. You know, he's kind of like an introverted engineer. He's just kind of like heads down building, but maybe that makes him perfect for this.
Right.
This is Uniswap Labs tweeting, despite SEC rhetoric that most tokens are securities, the reality is that tokens are just a digital file format. Let's talk about what we're actually doing here and trying to regulate and call securities. You can't like regulate JPEGs and GIFs. You know, like Gary Gensler, the SEC doesn't have a mandate over open source software. They're not regulators of GitHubs on the internet. This is a digital file format that we're actually talking about. Anyway, what do some of the legal minds think about this?
Yeah, so Gabe Shapiro, who is a lawyer over in the Delphi world, he tweets out, and this is why some people are perhaps considering this might be about the Uni token. My opinion, Gabe says, don't overthink the Uniswap case. Probably the SEC will win on securities issues with Uni token and lose on Uniswap, the AMM, being a securities exchange. Of course, we'll have to see all the facts and circumstances. I have no insider knowledge, just my hunch on current info. I would actually kind of call that a big loss if it was about the Uniswap token and then the Uni token, and then the Uni token was like deemed a security. I would definitely call that an L.
That would definitely be an L. This is another take from a crypto lawyer. Today's Wells notice against Uniswap is disappointing, but it's not unexpected from the SEC. It's another abuse on power, unsurprising from an SEC that last month a federal judge ruled committed a, quote, gross abuse of power by lying in court about a crypto project. That's the context
here. This is the chief legal officer of Uniswap, not just
a
lawyer.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
This is the dude. Who is bald?
Bald is bullish. Bald is bullish. Good job, Eric Walmy. That's why he did it, huh? He's trying to get more bullish. What's Paul Gray will say, who's also under, like, he is Coinbase's chief legal officer and obviously fighting the SEC right now.
Yeah, okay, so about the three things that the SEC might be taking Uniswap to court on: the actual exchange itself, the Uni token, and then the Uniswap wallet.
Yeah.
We already know that the Coinbase wallet, was that case that the SEC was trying to take against Coinbase,
thrown out.
That part was thrown out. And so like that part feels super secure because a court already threw it out. So like, check. You know, preemptive check mark on like the wallet side of things. We also know that secondary transactions are cleared from being security sales. We know this from the XRP case when SEC tried to take Ripple and lost versus Ripple. And so we already know that like any sort of secondary transactions on the Uniswap AMM does not make a token a security. You can try and go argue that a token is security, but just being on Uniswap, the exchange, does not make them securities. So like two of the three big things is already have like preemptive check marks in them because we already have court cases that have produced clarity where the SEC has not, leaving the Uni token as like kind of the one that we don't have,
which would still be a huge loss.
which were, if they won, but they would also still have to like make the argument that they would win. And like the, you again, like the way that the Uniswap token has entered the world and the lab's relationship with the token and the, all of that stuff is like the best that has ever been done in terms of like buttoned up compliance.
It's one of our best ones, I think.
It's our best ones. And so like, again, it's our, they're picking on our star fighter. Like I choose to box the champion. Like, you don't do that.
Maybe, like, all these losses that Paul Grewal is pointing out, maybe the SEC just likes taking L's in court, man. Maybe.
Well, see, that's
just
what Jake Stravinsky said. It's okay. Like, if you aren't taking crypto to court and losing, you're not trying hard enough.
Well, the SEC's trying really hard because they're losing a
really
lot.
Hard.
This is Jake again. I don't know who needs to hear this, but the SEC is a financial markets regulator, not the open source software police. I think they need to hear that, Jake. He's got a summary of the vibes here in case you were down in the dumps about this. He says a good thing that crypto as an industry is not a group that scares easily. Here are five reasons to stand strong in the face of the SEC's threats. Number one, as a reminder, the SEC doesn't make the law. Congress does that. Okay. So they can take people to court. They don't make the law. Number two, they're taking L's in courts. Many courts are rejecting the SEC's approach. Number three, the industry is going on the offense. That's happening right now. I'm getting fired up just talking about this.
Yeah.
Number four, new SEC leadership could change everything. Gary Gensler is not Emperor King. He won't be there forever. Number five, the industry keeps innovating. We are continuing to build out here. So those are reasons to be optimistic here, David.
Yeah, and even with the strategy that the SEC needs to take people to court and lose in order for like the Democrats to be satisfied with SEC performance, eventually the courts also like catch up to that. They you know, catch wind of other SEC cases.
They listen to the Bankless podcast.
Yeah, that's right. And so when they see like these, like, yeah, I don't think you've had the time to listen to the Jake Stravinsky episode that I did with him. It came out this morning. But like there was this one court case that the SEC, not Gary Gensler, but the SEC lawyer lied through his teeth to the judge. And then the judge called them out on that fact.
Yes.
And so you can only do this so many times before the court, like, sir, SEC, your reputation precedes you. You're going to take the L here. And the L's just come faster and faster and faster.
Well, you have switched me to be a bit more optimistic about this because I think you're right on that. This is a great case to bring in front of courts, and it's kind of our prize fighter. I will say one thing though, David, that's kind of bad in the interim. While this all gets figured out, again, it could take years. This is bad for U.S. crypto developers and founders.
Totally.
Okay. Because what startup is going to build a crypto company in the U.S. after this? When you have the resources of a Uniswap, that's one thing. And Uniswap wouldn't have had this like a few years ago. Now they've kind of quote unquote made it so they can defend themselves. But if you're a startup founder and you're thinking about doing a crypto project, there's no way you're going to do it in the US. Who loses from that? US founders, US entrepreneurs, US citizens, the US economy, the US jobs market. And like, that's kind of painful and it's going to set the US back. I think that gets fixed through regulatory arbitrage. Other companies will welcome these entrepreneurs and welcome these builders. And it'll all be fine. At some point in time, the U.S. will change its policy, change its mind, hopefully not being dragged kicking and screaming. But in the interim, it's just a complete cell phone, and particularly for the founders that are trying to build in the U.S.
Speaking of founders building in the United States, EigenLayer and EigenDA are currently on mainnet.
Yeah.
So shifting gears here a little bit. So after a successful testnet and passing $13 billion in TVL, EigenLayer has turned on some of its switches, not all of them. So like the EigenLayer brand, the EigenLayer cautiousness, they are slowly rolling out their mainnet. So some things have been turned on. Other things are still to be turned on. So what are the things that have been turned on? Restakers can now delegate their ETH, their restaked ETH, to their operator of choice. Operators, what are operators? These are the people who run AVSs. Operators can now register with EigenLayer and opt in to run AVSs. And then AVSs themselves can now register with the protocol, starting with EigenDA, which has already done this, which is now online.
Remind people what an AVS is too, David.
An AVS, actively validated service. It's basically an Eigen app. Think software as a service plus crypto economic security of ETH. So you are just a software normal SaaS business, but you can add trust into your service offering by integrating with EigenLayer as an AVS. So it's an Eigen app.
One of the biggest apps to launch as well is this homegrown application, a data availability application called EigenDA. And that has also launched this week. What are the details behind EigenDA?
Yes. Well, in order for EigenLayer to launch, at least one AVS needs to be online, or else what does it even mean to launch? EigenLayer, EigenDA is the only incubated, self-incubated AVS out of the EigenLayer team. It's kind of, it actually just makes perfect sense as like, EigenLayer needs to like kind of dog food its own project. EigenDA just is the most proximate, like it's the best AVS to really get this whole system started.
All Ethereum rollups need DA, basically really cheap DA. So why not do it here?
And also specifically, there is like a very close relationship between the concept of DA and coordination. And Sriram just loves coordination. EigenLayer is like this big coordination app. If you really like want to zoom out and get kind of like cosmic about it. And so EigenDA is now online, which now many of the rollups who have been like positioning to consume EigenDA are now consuming EigenDA, like projects like Mantle, many, many, many others. And so that is the big news. There are things that are not online right now. So in protocol payments from AVS to operators, which is like everyone is, why is everyone excited about EigenLayer? Because it gets yield. Yield is not turned on. Payments, like paying for the AVS services, not yet turned on. That'll be coming soon. And also slashing. And so there is actually really no notion of like slashing in EigenDA. But like slashing is a very core primitive of the EigenLayer system. So to really have like all cylinders of the EigenLayer app, the EigenLayer system running, you need these two things to get turned on. And then also many, many more AVSs. 10 AVSs are currently on the Holsky testnet. And so like they're all trying to get online as soon as possible here. So there's a lot, there's going to be like a series of these announcements of like even more about the EigenLayer system is online. But this is very much the big one. We are now through the first big hurdle.
No word on a token yet, of course, not publicly.
Oh, of course not.
First we go mainnet and then maybe something else later. I think what's really interesting to me here is how EigenDA is going to compete against Celestia, right? And how all that's going to maybe compete against you know, Blob Space. But reportedly, EigenDA is like 5x, has 5x the throughput capacity of Celestia even. And I'm sure Celestia will upgrade. I'm sure that will change, but it'll be a race for that. And some pretty big layer twos are set up to use EigenDA. So MegaETH, that's like one that's coming on the scene. Movement, Conduit, these are rollups as a service. Caldera, all of these. So some early traction for sure. I also like Sriram's framing of this. You know, he thinks like abstractly, almost philosophically about these things, and his take in general on the stack that we are building in crypto, at least from the Ethereum perspective, is Ethereum is the verifiable internet. Rollup is the verifiable web server. AVS is the verifiable software as a service, SaaS, and EigenLayer is the verifiable cloud. And then he goes through kind of like some more details what that means.
Hot.
Yeah, it's a pretty good take, I think.
Yeah. There was just like a big like celebration in the crypto space because like EigenLayer has already like produced its own ecosystem of like startups. Like every AVS is a startup. Operators are leveraging this. So there's a lot of people like hooking into the EigenLayer ecosystem. So there's like one just big grand celebration. It's like, hey, EigenLayer team, congrats for launching. And they're like, there's this like meta that emerged of just like people would retweet the EigenLayer announcement tweet with their like selfie with Sriram. So I just put it into a collage.
Oh my God.
I just put it all together. There were so many
Sriram selfies.
It turned into this meme of just
the
like
Vitalik.
Number one, congrats to the EigenLayer team for launching on mainnet. Number two, here's my selfie with Sriram. And so I just took a screenshot of every single
well,
one
such
and just put it into
such
a single
a friendly
picture.
Guy.
One of the most beloved founders I've ever seen in the crypto space.
Yeah, I really enjoy Sriram. I think one thing that's interesting about this, David, I'm going to see, we'll see how this emerges, is kind of like the ETH holder alignment behind EigenLayer. Okay, so if you were an ETH holder, just like economically, rationally, what's good for my bags type of question, then what's good for your bags is rollups using Ethereum for blob space, essentially, and using Ethereum as a DA layer, right? That's good for your bags. It's not good for your bags if rollups start using Celestia DA, because that's not Ethereum. But it is good for your bags. It is good for ETH price or fundamentals if they use EigenDA. True. And I'm wondering how sticky that magnet will be in crypto at all. Like you could see the ETH community and ETH holders at least pushing EigenDA over Celestia because it's more certainly economically aligned. It's in their incentives to do so. Did I just say some like dirty words like on the show today? I mean, that's just an incentive that's at play, right?
You said some tribal words, which I don't think either of us have ever avoided prior to this. I did do an episode with Nick White yesterday about Celestia, and like Celestia as a project, really, really interesting. However, as a fan of Ethereum alignment, IDBA, also super interesting.
As an ETH bag holder.
Yeah. Well, there are just fundamentally different properties about Celestia versus IDBA, where like IDBA, Celestia is a blockchain, IDBA not a blockchain.
Yeah.
So has the luxury of just truly optimizing for an absolute magnitude of capacity, where Celestia has like consensus and like sovereignty and some like other things that it is interested in. Yeah, which makes it, which like makes these things like materially divergent, right? Like there could be a world of like eigenlayer rollups that are just completely independent from Ethereum rollups. And so it makes sense that Ethereum rollups would opt for EigenDA just because it's close to the heart, right? It's like close to the nexus.
What's this tweet you included in our list here?
Yes. Okay. So this is actually kind of like moving on to a new subject, but the new subject is an AVS. And so this is Omni Network, which is an AVS inside of the EigenLayer ecosystem. And this is one of like the big predictions I've been making about EigenLayer and my strategy, this bull market, which is not to speculate in meme coins because I don't got that kind of time and I'm like actually just bad at it.
You want to speculate on restaking, don't you?
I want to speculate on restaking. That's right. And so the Omni Network, which is an AVS on top of EigenLayer, which provides just interoperability and defragmentation of the Ethereum rollup space by providing economic security between rollups, is dropping 13.3% of their total allocation going to EigenLayer restakers.
Ooh.
13.3%.
This is a drop. It's not just points.
This is an actual airdrop of a real token, not just points.
Huh.
10% going to Beacon Chain Solo Stakers, 7.7% going to Miladies, and 5.7% going to Pudgy Penguin. So giving away like an aggressive amount of the tokens, 13.3% of that is going to EigenLayer restakers. And so like the idea, the whole thesis behind the EigenLayer like point farm, which is like you farm the EigenLayer token, you farm the LRT that you're using to farm the EigenLayer token. And then in the background, you have these like plethora of AVSs that are all going to airdrop to the restakers, of which this is one, I think the first one that's actually happened and is now happening. So
and all you have to do is stake your ETH.
All you have to do is stake
it again.
ETH.
Double staking.
Again. No, restaking, not double staking.
Why didn't double staking catch on? What do we have coming up?
Coming up next, Solana's NFT platform, Tensor, also drops their token, probably one of the more hyped token drops in a while. Newly announced Circle partnership with BlackRock. Ooh, why that's a big deal.
I'm excited about that.
Yeah, and Monad shatters records with the largest raise in crypto this cycle. Ethereum killer, maybe?
Question mark?
Or Ethereum execution client? Maybe
or
both.
Executor or execution client. One of the two.
Executor or execution client. Stay tuned to find out. But first, we're going to talk about all these sponsors that make this show possible, especially Mantle. Mantle, the layer two that is actually building EigenDA in collaboration with EigenLayer
before
itself.
Before it was cool.
So shout out Mantle. Let's go hear from them right now. Mantle, formerly known as BitDAO, is the first DAO-led Web3 ecosystem, all built on top of Mantle's first core product, the Mantle Network, a brand new high-performance Ethereum layer two built using the OP stack, but uses EigenLayer's data availability solution instead of the expensive Ethereum layer one. Not only does this reduce Mantle Network's gas fees by 80%, but it also reduces gas fee volatility, providing a more stable foundation for Mantle's applications. The Mantle Treasury is one of the biggest DAO-owned treasuries, which is seeding an ecosystem of projects from all around the Web3 space for Mantle. Mantle already has sub-communities from around Web3 onboarded, like Game7 for Web3 gaming, and Bybit for TVL and liquidity and on-ramps. So if you want to build on the Mantle network, Mantle is offering a grants program that provides milestone-based funding to promising projects that help expand, secure, and decentralize Mantle. If you want to get started working with the first DAO-led Layer 2 ecosystem, check out Mantle at mantle.xyz and follow them on Twitter at 0xmantle. Welcome to Consensus 2024. Consensus is one of the biggest hubs for all things crypto, blockchain, and Web3. This May, Consensus is celebrating 10 years of decentralizing the future. Going to Consensus means being in good company with over 15,000 attendees from over 100 countries. You have the opportunity to learn directly from the architects and advocates representing Bitcoin, Ethereum, Solana, along with the teams from popular layer 2s like Mantle, Arbitrum, Optimism, Base, and others. But Consensus is more than just discussions and presentations. Badge holders get access to witness 10 professional karate combat fights and one unprofessional one between myself and Nick Carter. For the visionaries, PitchFest is your spotlight, presenting a stage for the most promising early stage Web3 companies. And for the devs, the hackathon offers a unique chance to build your next project or take your existing project to the next level. Immerse yourself in hundreds of side events and hacker houses scattered around Austin. Register for Consensus 2024 today and save 20% with code Bankless. Celo is the mobile first EVM compatible carbon negative blockchain built for the real world, driving real world use cases like mobile payments and mobile DeFi. And with Opera MiniPay as one of the fastest growing Web3 wallets, Celo is seeing a meteoric rise with over 300 million transactions and 1.5 million monthly active addresses. And now Celo is looking to come home to Ethereum as a layer two. Optimism, Polygon, Matter Labs, and Arbitrum have all thrown their hats in the ring for the Celo layer two to build upon their stacks. Why the competition? The Celo layer two will bring huge advantages like a decentralized sequencer, off-chain data availability secured by Ethereum validators, and one block finality. What does that all mean for you? With Celo Layer 2, gas fees will stay low, and you can even pay for gas natively using ERC20 tokens, sending crypto to phone numbers across wallets using Social Connect. But Celo is a community-governed protocol. This means that Celo needs you to weigh in and make your voice heard. Join the conversation in the Celo forums, follow Celo on Twitter, and visit Celo.org to shape the future of Ethereum.
Tensor Token, TNSR, just dropped NFT trading infrastructure. I would kind of call Tensor part of the big three of Solana. I don't know if anyone else calls this the big three, but like Tensor, the NFT platform, and Jupiter, the exchange, and then Jito, the execution client. Yeah. And so this was the last of the big three tokens to get dropped into the Solana ecosystem. Holders of the Tensor token benefit from fee discounts when transacting on Tensor. So utility for the token, which is, you know, bearish because fundamentals are bearish. This is part of season three. So participants of season one, two, and three received treasury boxes with their tokens. Those treasury boxes are now available to be opened. So the prices hopped around from $1.8 to $1.6 with a max supply of a billion. That puts Tensor as a 1.6 fully diluted billion market cap.
We got another unicorn airdrop.
Unicorn airdrop, current market cap around 200 million because the circulating supply is 12.5%. So still pretty early in the distribution. So 55% of the token goes to community, which is like
generous.
Great. Well done, well done, well done. 27% to core contributors. I'm assuming that's the team itself. 9% investors and advisors, and then 9% for future fundraising and development. So just like miscellaneous. You have 180 days to claim. I actually don't know what the criteria is. If I got this token drop, that's hilarious. And they are starting season four. So season four has begun. I bet that's where that remaining 9% is going.
You know, I think the best alpha for this cycle is I have never seen airdrops fall this thick and this large. We just got another unicorn airdrop this week. Okay. And so if you
We're gonna really need to raise the threshold of what it means to me to be a unicorn.
Airdrop hunter is all I got to say. So Tensor was in the airdrop.
It's been on there
hunter.
For a long, long
it's
time.
It's been on there for a long time. This is a product that Bankless provides. You can go click the link in the show notes and get access to it. It's bankless.com/airdrop hyphen hunter.
And or if you are just so advanced that you don't think that this product is for you, but you don't want to answer any of your annoying friends' questions about what they should be going to do, just send them here.
Yeah, look at all these new ones, David. This is like new means it was added in the last couple of weeks. All these new airdrops to go hunt. And this is just huge ROI, time well spent. I'm actually surprised more people don't do this. And I know only crypto people, quote unquote, know about it, but like on a monthly basis, people are making like thousands of dollars at this point in the cycle. I'm not saying it's going to last forever because it won't, never does.
Right.
But at this point in the cycle, huge ROI for going on airdrop hunts. And it's fun too. You get to use these protocols.
Learning how to use a protocol and hunting for an airdrop is the same thing, which is actually how this product came to be.
Yeah, should be when everything's aligned. David, you saw this. I know we predicted this because we talked about this on our episode, but we couldn't talk about it explicitly,
around,
right? So Circle announces USDC smart contract for transfers by BlackRock's Biddle Fund investors. Okay, What that means is Bankless folks will remember we were talking about, we did an episode on this. We talked a few rollups ago about BlackRock releasing tokenized treasuries on chains. You can scroll in the Etherscan. You can find out, like you can see the contract where they released this. Well, now Circle has partnered with BlackRock. And so investors with BlackRock treasuries can now hit a button, David, and convert those treasuries into USDC. It was a button. Yeah. It's a smart contract call. In fact, look, this is what it looks like. This is the code on Etherscan that shows the pipeline from BlackRock treasuries to stablecoins, what it looks like. So in goes US treasuries and out comes USDC. And I just want to remind folks, there's a lot of treasuries out there. And BlackRock has infinite supply access to them. And the US continues to make more. There's $27 trillion worth of treasuries out there. And we have just started the tokenization process. And already, BlackRock is leading. See this? 300 million. It was still early days. But wow. This essentially, this is the banks opening branches on Ethereum, as we've said before. And I think is pretty bullish.
Smart contracts are the new bank branches. I love that.
I mean, so we got a $24 trillion pipeline from treasuries to stablecoins. I also actually think that this is a proto-central bank digital currency, actually.
Sure. Yeah, except for like a CBDC is meant for payments and this is meant for like wealth.
I think but like all the of these USDC things are converging. Part is the payment part, right? And then this is the connection to treasuries. So this connects treasuries and the Fed directly to a stablecoin, USDC.
Yeah.
So stablecoins are going to happen in the US because BlackRock and the banks want them to happen. Right. All right. Yeah. And I think you'll never get a CBDC through in the US. What you will get are these private stablecoins. Did you know BlackRock owns part of the equity of Circle? So mm-hmm. Circle.
Oh, wait. No, I did not know that.
They do. They're owners of Circle. Circle's going to IPO this year, I would expect sometime. I mean, that's not public yet, but there's a lot of rumors and speculation going on. And BlackRock owns a portion of Circle. This is essentially US banks bringing a private market bank-driven stablecoin, a private version of a central bank digital currency. The US's answer to a central bank digital currency. This is how it's happening. And so I think we're seeing the early phases of the contours of what this will look like.
I'm willing to bet that BlackRock has ownership in Circle. I bet you they did some sort of deal, a part of this deal. So like making Biddle and USDC one-to-one convertible, which like just to really talk about the implications here, this makes Biddle a quality collateral asset inside of like things like Aave or MakerDAO or like any sort of DeFi app. And so you can get the yield of treasuries, but you can use this token as collateral in DeFi. And why you might not have been able to do that without this USDC conversion is that you need a liquidity profile for Aave. If they are ever going to liquidate you, they need Biddle to be extremely liquid. Now Biddle is as liquid as USDC on Ethereum, which is like one of the most liquid assets on Ethereum after Ether. And so it's actually just kind of cool to have on-chain treasuries be like with a direct equivalent pipeline to USDC, which is a direct equivalent pipeline to like all of DeFi. And so like there's like a lot of people saying like, oh, BlackRock's coming into like the world of DeFi. The banks are coming. Why are we celebrating the banks coming in into the world of crypto? One of the big problems about like the old financial system is just the walled gardens, the silos that is Wall Street that like the average player cannot play in, and it's a gate. It's a gatekeeping, and you can't go there. You're not elite enough. But in the Ethereum world, like we are all on the same platform, and so everyone gets to like check on everyone else, and everything is just like everything's a lot closer. We're all on the same playing field.
Yeah, I don't really understand that take. I mean, people said, like, because I tweet something like this out and people are saying, bankless, look, it's bankless, and they're cheering on the banks. Okay, this is the banks coming to our crypto economic system and choosing our system as the base layer, the settlement layer, rather than Fedwire. This is a win for us. This is a Trojan horse for us. They're bringing their tokens on our chain, on our decentralized, open, permissionless network. And they're paying us gas fees in order to secure this network and make it stronger. And they're providing liquidity and they're helping to distribute more private keys in more hands. This is nothing, from my perspective, but a win for crypto. Now, we lose if they start to co-opt this chain and they start to take away the open, permissionless, decentralization properties, right? But that's what Ethereum has been built to withstand. And we're going to have to withstand that anyway. So I see this as nothing. And if, this doesn't preclude your ability to go hold DAI or Ethereum or like anything or be completely bankless if you want to be. It just gives you the choice. So I see it as a total win.
I mean, this is just us ripping out the guts of the old financial system and replacing it with better ones, the ones that, that we built from the bottom up.
David, big, big raise going on this week. The biggest of this cycle that we've seen, $225 million. That's not the valuation. That's the raise itself.
That's how much cash went into the bank.
Yeah, in Monad. Okay, so what is Monad?
Monad is a bytecode equivalent EVM layer one that is they took everything out of the EVM refrigerator, reassembled it, made it better, and then put everything back in. So it's EVM bytecode equivalent. It's not like a little bit equivalent. It's not compatible. It is 100% equivalent to the Ethereum virtual machine, but it has a parallelized execution client. So it's a parallelized EVM. We all love parallelization these days with a parallelized database, because if you have a parallelized execution, well, you also need parallelized input and output retrieval out of data. And so Monad has done the very hard thing of completely rebuilding the Ethereum virtual machine, because the network effects around the EVM are massive, but the EVM itself is like kind of broken. And even Vitalik would say this. And so they've done the very hard work of just like truly optimizing the EVM as a piece of software as well as possible.
So I think, like, I guess to get a picture of this, picture Ethereum, except it supports, you know, 10,000 transactions per second.
Yeah. And Ethereum layer one that is like, you know, limitless in its constraints.
Yes. And the existing smart contracts that work on Ethereum and all EVM chains will work on this. And they're not at mainnet yet, so they still have some work to do, but they're getting closer, and this raise gets them even closer. There's a lot of investors in this, basically everybody in crypto, including, by the way, like Bankless Ventures. And I think there's a question outstanding on this is, why doesn't Monad deploy as a layer two rather than they're deploying as a layer one? In fact, I saw, title headlines, new ETH killer, right? All you always get this, right? High TPS chain, it's EVM compatible. Is this the new ETH killer? And so I think a lot of Ethereum people are like, why not just do this as a layer two? Isn't that what layer twos are for? I can't speak to the founder's intentions here. I know I've asked that question before, have you, Keone, asked that question. And I think we'll have him on the podcast when they get closer to mainnet, and we'll ask him the exact same question. But I do think that there is an economic incentive at play here that people should just like, maybe it's obvious, but people should know about. There's a token premium for big names, big name execution layers to be layer ones, alternative layer ones to Ethereum rather than layer twos. And what do I mean by that? Token price is higher if you deploy as a layer one. There's like, I don't make the rules. I wish this wasn't the case many times, but that's kind of the narrative, because you can take Ethereum's value and you basically say, well, X percent of that, you know, and it's a higher valuation. At least that seems to be the current view on the market that market participants are taking. If you're an alternative layer one, you can have a higher valuation than a layer two. Until that changes, I don't expect actors like Monad to become layer twos. Until that narrative shifts, until that meta shifts, it probably won't happen this cycle. If it does happen, it probably will happen during a bear cycle. But until you get that economic incentive shift, as much as people like me want these alternative layer ones to be layer twos anyway, because you benefit from the network effect and economic security of Ethereum, I don't think they become layer twos. What do you think of that?
I think that's right. I think the answer as to why layer ones catch such a strong premium has always been because if you are a layer one, you are competing as money. Whether you think that you're competing as money or you intend to compete as money, you are competing as money. All layer ones has been part of the bankless thesis. All layer ones are money or attempts to be money. And so they get the money premium. They get some sort of like tailwinds because they are the money for their own ecosystem. Like the OP token, the ARB token, they are not the monies of their respective networks. ETH is. So Monad, as somebody like Keone, very ambitious founder, he's going for the whole thing. He's going for money. as making a layer one. And so whatever the Monad ticker is, whatever the Monad token is trying to be the money of the Monad ecosystem. And that's how you catch a very strong premium.
So is this good for Ethereum or bad for Ethereum?
Well, okay. All other layer ones are bad for all other layer ones, fundamentally. That's just like how it works. That's why, like, there is no such thing. Like, there's a lot of people who are like, oh, why can't we all get along? I'm like, yeah, we can all grow the pie, but we can also take a larger share of the pie too. Like, all the competition kind of boils down to that. They all compete. It is also extra competitive with Ethereum because it's the EVM, but we've also seen other layer ones that are EVM based, like Avalanche, like, I guess, compete with Ethereum and I guess take away value from Ethereum, but also contribute back to it, right? Developers, if you're developing on the EVM, you're helping Ethereum. I think of all EVM forks, of which there have been many in the crypto halls of history, this is the one that I'm seeing actually produce real substantial value for the EVM ecosystem. So, like, you know, Ethereum or one of the many Ethereum forks like Avalanche, Phantom or whatever could also benefit from the Monad VM, the parallelized
EVM.
Same
with layer twos.
Same with layer twos, right? And this is a conversation I had with Ansgar not too long ago. It's like, actually, what would it take to like rip out the EVM on the Ethereum layer one and replace it with a better Ethereum EVM? Nuanced answer, of course. That episode's out for Bankless Premium subscribers. What Monad could do, I think eventually the Monad EVM will be open source. I'm guessing it's going to be like a Uniswap kind of license where they release the code, but under a business license. So it's like protected for like 3 to 4 years to give like actual Uniswap a head start. And then other people can fork it for free later. I bet that's what's going to happen here with Monad. And so I bet you Ethereum layer twos will eventually use the Monad EVM. The Monad virtual machine could actually become a Ethereum layer one execution client, because there is, like I said, there's a big difference between like bytecode equivalent Ethereum equivalents versus just being Ethereum EVM compatible. So like this could be an execution client for the Ethereum layer one alongside like Geth or Reth or all the other execution clients, which would be immensely beneficial.
I agree.
To Ethereum.
I think people will see in this what sort of whatever their preconceptions maybe are, because there's multiple ways to view this. You could see this as, oh, VCs are funding a brand new EVM execution client for all of Ethereum. Right. Isn't this amazing? All of Ethereum, the entire ecosystem benefits, including all of the layer twos and then potentially L1. Or you could view this as, oh my God, it's a new Ethereum killer. And it's but it's like, you know, max TPS. Right. Or you could say, this isn't really competitive with Ethereum. Ethereum is already credibly neutral. It's got the most distributed validator set. It's got all of the infrastructure built on top of it. It's a settlement layer. These chains aren't really competing for that. They're competing on the execution layer. And so this Monad is the Solana killer. It's going to go kill the other monolithic chains, essentially, right? There's all different ways you could view this. And I think, like, who knows? Maybe it's some of all of the above. I think one thing to watch, though, is for layer twos, parallelized layer twos that are coming. So this is the first as an alternative layer one, but we're about to see projects like Mega ETH, which is like this similar type of ultra fast, high TPS type of deployment, EVM, fully EVM compatible, only as a layer two. And then you also have Eclipse and Ellipsis, and you have Movement, which are SVMs and like movement chains, and they're all deploying as layer twos. And I wonder what pressures, what forces,
and layer ones,
what forces that they might bring to the table as well. So it's going to be interesting.
I think that's a great snapshot. Yeah, totally.
We got some jobs this week, David. Bankless is hiring. What are we hiring for?
Number one, a podcast video editor / media operation. So if you can work your way around Final Cut or Premiere and you know a thing or two about crypto and podcasting, we definitely want to talk to you. Come make our podcast better. Also a senior product designer and a growth marketer. So come join literally the most fun company in crypto. At least I have fun. I don't know about you, Ryan.
You are having fun here because we're about to get to it, ending this episode. You got some combat scheduled.
No.
What is going on here, David? So you told me about this a few weeks ago, and you dropped it. You are about to do battle with somebody else. Is this like, first of all, this is karate combat, but it feels like more like boxing to me. I don't know my martial arts.
Technically, it is karate. So me and Nick Carter are karate combating each other at Austin, Texas.
This is a real thing.
Real. for this is a real thing. Same exact organization that hosted the BitBoy versus Light fight not too long ago. So like it's called Karate Combat, so it's technically karate rules. It's basically kickboxing. So like there's no like on the floor grappling.
You're not gonna choke each other out.
You can't choke each other out. But like you can punch and you can kick.
Wow.
You can punch and kick. Yeah.
Why are you doing this? Do you have beef with this Nick Carter guy? I mean, he's been on the podcast more than any other guest. Do you secretly hate this guy?
Other than Vitalik, yeah. No, Nick's great. He's awesome. I love the guy.
What does he think of you? Does he share that sentiment? Is he?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, we're super amicable.
So why are you guys fighting?
We're great buds.
Why are you fighting?
He hit me up and was like, hey, do you want to box at Consensus? And I was like, no, I don't want to box at Consensus. And then like over the weekend, I was like, but what if I box Nick Carter at Consensus? And then for some reason on Monday, I was like, F it, let's do it.
I love this quote from Nick Carter. David and I aren't claiming to be amazing fighters. The objective is to entertain and take on a new challenge, not to begin decorated fight careers. So
yeah, so this is both of us experiencing just like for some reason, like this announcement just like brought out all of our haters being like, because Nick and I both have like a very strong amount of haters on crypto Twitter. Like I've offended the Solana camp one too many times. Nick Carter has offended the Laser Eyed Maxis one too many times. And so now it brings them all out and like all the haters like, oh my God, I would love to box David Hoffman. And I'm like, well, I don't know who you are. No one does.
You're only
so,
going
like,
to box your friends, right?
I'm only going to box my friends. Yeah. It's like kind of like a Mirror of Erised thing where like, if you actually want to like cause harm to someone, you don't get to do it.
Yeah. Well, anyways. So how are you training? How are you going to be ready for this?
I'm not disclosing that.
Maybe put that on the premium feed. You got to get Nick to subscribe to that. Yeah. Hey up, Nick. Yeah.
All right, so this is May 30th in Austin, Texas. There's actually a Poly Market. Have you seen the Poly Market? Oh, can you play this video?
Let me play this.
Ethereum versus Bitcoin. Let's settle this. David Hoffman, I'm calling you out. Let's go.
May 30th, Austin, Texas. I'll see you there. Free on YouTube. This guy's head off. There you go.
Oh, take his wow.
Head. There you go.
Are you ready for this, David?
Man. That guy's got nothing on you. That's what I'm talking about, man.
Ooh. Jeez, I mean, Nick is really training up for this.
Yeah, his coach is pretty aggro for sure.
Okay,
I've never like I've hung out with Nick Carter like a few times. We went rock climbing once. He's kind of tight. The muscles are kind of tight. It's not very loose.
All right.
I
sense a little hesitation in your voice, but what are the markets telling us?
So when the Poly Market opened up, it priced me as the winner by 60-30, a 2-to-1 odds.
Uh-huh.
For your boy truly, that has now come down, so the margin is now 53-40 in favor of me. Yeah, for some reason the Poly Market is saying I'm winning, which like I was surprised.
Wow, so far, right? Huh. Yeah. So is there a call to action for the Bankless Nation? Should people get
if you're gonna go to Consensus, come watch me and Nick Carter punch each other in the face.
Oh my God, that's almost enough to get me out of the house to go to a conference, David. Almost.
Yeah, I think. But it turns out you can watch it online.
That's
too.
Right. When he said YouTube, I'm like sold. I can't wait. Good luck though, and whatever
there is $39,000. Betting on the Poly Market between Nick and
Matt. We should say this is for a good cause, right? So a 10K purse goes to where?
So whoever loses pays $10,000 to the respective ecosystem of the winners for open source development. And so if I lose, which I won't, $10,000 is going to go to Bitcoin Core, which it won't. And then if Nick loses, which he will, $10,000 will be going to Protocol Guild.
Wow.
To fund Ethereum developers.
Wow.
And then there's also one more bet. So Nick Carter has a bet out with Justin Drake about the ETF approval.
Oh, he's not going to fight Drake. I was like, please,
no,
God, no.
No, 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 no.
Save that. Save that for me.
Save that for the podcasters. Okay. And so if the ETF, if the ETH ETF gets denied in May, pretty soon here, Justin Drake has to give up his Tungsten Cube to Nick Carter. And this is something that Nick Carter is doing with many people. He's like collected like 4 or 5 people's Tungsten Cubes from winning bets with them. Yeah. I don't think he's ever lost a bet with a Tungsten Cube.
David. Are you sure? Like Drake's going to lose. He's going to lose. So you got to, I mean, because this is now set up to be a Bitcoin versus Ethereum thing. I just heard it.
Yeah, this is how we're branding it. Yeah, Bitcoin versus Ethereum. But the loser of the bet has to also give a Tungsten Cube to the other. And if Nick loses the fight, which he will, I get Justin Drake's Tungsten Cube.
Wow.
And that specific one.
The winner of this fight, of course, has to go fight someone from the Solana community, right? Is that how that works?
There's zero people in the Solana community that I'm interested in fighting.
Fight Anatoly. Disclosures.
I don't think either of him and I want that.
We got to remind folks, of course, we are investors. We're not journalists. We don't do paid content. There's always a link to our disclosures in the show notes. You can find that at bankless.com/disclosures. And of course, crypto is risky. So is karate, boxing, whatever David's doing. You can lose what you put in, but we are headed west. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.